Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm, opening up the doors to Sports City once again here on a Sunday morning. Now, Sports City, a lot of stuff went down this past weekend from Friday until now. A couple of games that took place in the middle of the week as well. But Thursday night, I'm going to try and discuss as much as we possibly can. We got you guys for the next 90 minutes. And I feel a little controversy that happened last night, and I want to discuss it. I want to get into it, man. I actually try to get my people in here as best as I see fit. I try to get a lot of people involved into the kitchen, so it might get busy today with Sports City Vibe with us. You already know how we do. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Sports City, welcome to the brunch.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the. Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you, people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City chef with Sunday the brunch with Lark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Lark, the Moses, and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, and 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
The call-in number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chefs. And like I said, Sports City, some stuff went down last night, and I'm trying to get everybody I can involved into the kitchen so I can speak on the matter. But nevertheless, the show must go on. Calling in out of the West Virginia region of the United States of America, we have Tommy B. in the building. Tommy, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm good. Just win the Easter League, Virginia. Please, go back off to Canada where you belong. Bye. Leave.
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to jump into with you is the college football game. I did want to chop up what happened last night, but nevertheless, I'm going to wait until this kitchen fills up so I can speak on that matter. Some of the games that went down from yesterday, a lot of things that I know notably we would have taken care of and said went one way or the other. First and foremost, a nail-biting situation that took place in East Lansing with Ohio State winning by one up against Michigan State. I know Doc survived a hell of a scare. Your thoughts with Michigan State winning this game, losing this game by one to Ohio State?
I'm not gonna lie, didn't watch a lot of football yesterday. Not gonna lie, I had other things to do. Was checking in on this. I seen it. Seen the highlights. I do not understand why they went. I mean, I understand why they went for two to win the game and to tie it up. They get a ball back, do it a key interception, killed the ball game. Personally, if it would have been me, I'd have kicked the extra point, tied it up, and went out and played. I don't know if Ohio State overlooked Michigan State. I mean, it's hard to say, but this is a Michigan State team that's what, 2-8. They're not very good record wise. They lost to Illinois. So, I mean, everybody knows what's next week. High noon. Game day's going to be there. Game day's in Columbus. Well, I think it's 8-hour show. Something like that, 7 to 12 or whatever they're pulling at. ESPN is going to build this thing up so big. This Michigan in Ohio State, I really think that's all it was. I think Ohio State really was looking ahead to next week.
And I actually think that I agree with you that they're looking toward next week, but they should have took care of the business in front of them. Michigan State could have won that, trying to win that late. Winning by 1 point, I'm I'm not impressed with what Ohio State showed offensively, and I don't know if this is a situation where they're trying to sit on all of their fireworks before the game takes place next Saturday up against Michigan, because Michigan's defense has actually been their big staple this season. So I know they're not trying to give them too much to go off of, because I know Urban Meyer is going to try and pull out all of the stops in the game next week. So we'll see. But like I said, this was a heck of a scare. Michigan State could have beaten them, and for them to be now 3-8 on the season, they've only won one game within the conference in the Big Ten. I actually fear for Mark D'Antonio's job as well. Moving right along to the matchup that we're talking about, Michigan actually wins in the Big House 20-10 up against Indiana in an interesting game. It was an interesting game because Indiana had the lead going into the half, and then Michigan finally woke up, and all it needed to do was take care of business in that third quarter and ended up being the decisive score during that game. So I think both of these teams knew what lies ahead. Michigan being at home just had to stay afloat enough to be ahead of Indiana. But Indiana always plays these surprise games up against the quality teams in the Big Ten to give them that scare. Any thoughts toward the Michigan matchup up against Indiana?
Michigan needs their starting quarterback. They cannot throw the full. I did catch, I think it was late second quarter, and watched the rest of this game. Definitely the snowstorm had hit. Wow, that filled up quick with snow. Michigan, they got to get that starting quarterback back for Saturday. Because if not, you're not going to be able to line up and run that football like that against Ohio State defense. It's just not going to happen. You have got to throw in a pass here and there. So, I mean, Michigan, it's another game. Did they overlook Indiana because of what's next week?
I think both of them, both teams are trying not to give too much out, you know, to measure, to, you know, measure themselves up against one another. But like I said, this is the matchup that September 21st, I still remember the day. I'm almost 2 months away from making the claim that Michigan should be able to take care of business. I don't want to be showing up. Of course, Ohio State has been the boss in this matchup for the past almost decade now. It's almost been 10 years long that Ohio State has been taking care of business up against Michigan. Harbaugh, I'm pulling for your boys to get it done, but both of you have had a questionable output this past Saturday. Another interesting matchup in the Big 12 that I'd like to discuss is right there in Tommy's backyard. Oklahoma goes into Morganton and throttles the West Virginia Mountaineers. I feel bad because Sirius was with me yesterday, and he picked Oklahoma. And I picked West Virginia. I thought West Virginia could do it again. I don't even want to say fell short. They got beaten brutally, 56-28, in which there wasn't too much of the passing game involved from Oklahoma. It was more or less the run game, if you will. But, Tommy, your thoughts on this game? Oklahoma clearly taking care of business up against West Virginia.
It sucks. It sucks to be a Mountaineer. Big game at home, and they will let you down, and they will lose every guaranteed time. This game went exactly the way I thought it would. Oklahoma went in there. They jumped on the WV to get them started, and guess what? They showed them little country pumpkins on the mountain what it's like to play real football. Mountaineer fans, this is right here. This right here is why I can't support WVU. I have nothing to do with that university. Because when it's a big-time game, they will let you down no matter where it's played at.
And I was just on the air yesterday speaking with Sirius about how they were ranking West Virginia and how USC was the 20th-ranked team, won, and actually leapfrogged West Virginia when West Virginia had the better record. And I was actually standing up putting out, you know, somewhat of a stance for West Virginia. But this is a big awakening on how the committee seen things for West Virginia. And I wonder how far down they move now, because they've already not given them any credit up until this point. So Oklahoma's doing all that they can. Probably one of the surprise teams on the outside looking in of that playoff situation. If a couple of these teams fall, especially in that matchup between Michigan and Ohio State, whoever falls, if the committee pushes either Oklahoma or, you know, Penn State or Wisconsin, one of these teams on the outside looking in, possibly a potential shot, especially with Louisville losing it also, it's going to set up for an interesting situation, at least for this come around at the start of the week. Well, today's the start of the week anyway, but you know what I mean. Monday, Tuesday, the playoff situation gets looked at and addressed. Another matchup out there in the Pac-12, Washington State fell short up against Colorado at home. This is another game that I got wrong with serious with Colorado. I went Washington State. I felt like Washington State was actually playing good football up until this point. I actually started the game out with an interesting lead at the half. Colorado gets their feet underneath them and takes care of business. Your thought on this very interesting Pac-12 matchup with Colorado winning by a two-score game?
This Pac-12 South is very interesting. Colorado could literally play for the Pac-12 championship game. I think they're ahead. I think they're behind USC, because USC did win against their, well, might as well say city rival. But Colorado's legit. I didn't think they'd be this good this year. I didn't think they'd be good ever. I thought the worst thing they did was go to the Pac-12. But, hey, I guess I was wrong.
We'll see how things fizzle out in the Pac-12, because I really think Washington State is clear from a lot of people, especially with what's going down with USC right now. USC, just like you said, mentioned, they took care of business up against UCLA. Clearly the better team in the city, Battle of Los Angeles, the Bruins were the home team. But the shock of the day for me that I'd like to get into, Oregon goes into Utah and beats the Utes by two, winning 30-28. Now, this is the interesting part. Oregon had to go into that fourth and score 20 to win the game. They scored 20 in the fourth quarter to take care of business. I don't know if this actually sits well and helps Helfrich at the end of the day, because they're 4-7, 2-6 in the conference. I don't know if Helfrich hangs on to this job, especially the scenario that I set up on the show yesterday at the tailgate, saying how everything is going bad in San Francisco and everything went bad in Philadelphia. Chip Kelly might be removed from the 49ers organization if he doesn't turn this thing around. I'll be surprised if they hang on to him for another season, because we've seen them have a short leash on a couple of coaches with the San Francisco 49ers, i.e. Tom Sula. It could be the same situation. Well, this is just me, you know, wishfully thinking or throwing my opinion out there, that they could open the doors right back up for Chip Kelly to come right back to Oregon and run the same ship where everybody was gawking at him putting up 60 and 70-point efforts while Oregon was, you know, clearly one of the best teams in the country in the way that they were recruiting. Oregon comes up with a big win up against the number 12-ranked Utah team, in which they had to come back and have a storm of a fourth quarter. Your thoughts on this matchup, Oregon finally winning a big game this season?
If this was your big shocker of the day, then I don't know where in the hell you were at then, about 7 o'clock, because this is far from the big shocker of the day. And right now, your Pac-12 championship would be Washington and Colorado. Oregon losing to Utah, it's a shocker with the way Utah, or the way Oregon's playing.
Utah lost to Oregon.
Right. But with the way Oregon won, has lost some of these games this year, this is the head scratcher. I don't know. I mean, once again, it's that miracle round out there in the Pac-12. You never know what can happen.
Okay. Like I said, to me, the way that Utah has been playing all season long, coming up with some big wins and being a ranked team, at least higher than 15, up against an unranked Oregon team that has not really shown their true identity, this did shock me, at least to me. And mentioning the 7 o'clock game, if you're discussing the Florida or LSU game, I mean, I'll let you mention which game you're discussing as your shocker of the day.
Kansas beating Texas. Bye, Charlie Strong. Bye. You're gone. The big-time donators got what they wanted. You lost to Kansas. Bye. And there's reports coming out off of the Longhorns' Twitter page that Charlie Strong has been notified he will be fired at the end of the year. It's by what they posted. They tweeted out they will have the common courtesy to let him finish coach next week, well, Saturday. I believe it's TCU, but he will be gone. And the donors are putting pressure on the university to go after Tom Herman from Houston. That's who they want.
I think even before they got to this point and them losing to Kansas, that they were still going to, you know, get rid of Charlie Strong. But them losing to Kansas, that definitely is a surprise situation. But Texas, to me, for them to not be top 25 relevant, I just wanted to see how they were going to finish this season. But them losing to Kansas, Kansas was one of these teams that could not score. One of the teams that I punished, week after week, saying that they couldn't beat anybody, speaks volumes on what Texas was able to not do and secure a win in the Big 12. So I know this. Charlie Strong will get a job, but I know that they will definitely walk him out of those doors immediately so Texas could try and restore their situation and being one of the relevant powerhouses, not only in the Big 12, but also across the country, because known across the country, that burnt orange is a symbol of, you know, at least college football, to say the least. But right now, especially while Charlie Strong has been there, I mean, you could just enter any word here that is porous on their performance for the past 2 to 3 seasons, at least.
I mean, you cannot win a football game when you turn the ball over 6 times. I don't care who you are. You turn the ball over 6 times, you're going to lose pretty much every time.
But how much of the turning the ball over is placed on him, though? You know, like, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for that, like a fumble or interception. I mean, granted, if the play works, then he looks like a genius. But all in all, like I said, they have to find somebody, and he tried to turn that situation around. He couldn't, and Texas has been struggling, I want to say, for a solid 4 to 5 years right now of not really being one of the top 10 quality teams known across the country. They're trying to get this thing to work, and it hasn't. It has not. So they just like he said, they said that he will be allowed to run the team until the end of the season, and then they will let him go. I'm just wondering where he does end up landing, because he is a good coach. I don't want to make it look like he isn't a good coach. He actually lost this one by a field goal at that. But for Kansas to be in this game, for Kansas to have the lead going into the half and doing what was necessary to win this one in overtime, tough. It's a tough situation. But like I said, I wonder where his next landing spot will be, and hopefully he could turn another university around. There were too many eyes on him, especially being down there in the Big 12.
I think he'll be a D coordinator somewhere. Don't be a head coach. I don't think he's a head coach. I think someone needs to pick him up as a D coordinator and let him run the defense, personally.
Okay, any other matchup that you would like to talk about? I mean, Vanderbilt stunned the heck out of Ole Miss. Ole Miss lost by 3 touchdowns. LSU lost up against Florida 16-10. It really bothered me because both me and Sirius picked LSU. I really thought that LSU was actually turning the corner after losing Les Miles. And Florida wins this one by 6, and if Florida didn't even look impressive enough to clearly raise my eyebrow, Oregon State took care of business. You can repeat that again?
I said I really thought Florida would win this.
Okay.
Florida would win.
Oregon State took care of business up against Arizona. This is another coach that I'm thinking is on the hot seat, and Rich Rodriguez losing this one by 25 up there in Oregon State as well. This is going to be tough if he sits on another year out there and not able to produce, especially with the quality of players that they do have in Arizona. They have not been able to score the ball to the least bit in a Pac-12 where we clearly say that there's not great defense being played out there. He has not won a game this season in the Pac-12. Just to mention some that are outside of the top 25, any game that you would like to mention, Tommy, that we have missed or actually drew towards your attention?
USC's really turned it around. I know I say it every Sunday lately, but USC has really turned it around. I'm very interested to see how much further they go up now.
Especially with them being 13th ranked, we'll see if they can crack the top 10. They are a favorite team. I would say the coaches or the committee, a team that they like to mention. Another game that I like to mention, since you are in the backyard of the situation, Virginia Tech comes through late up against Notre Dame, winning a game 34-31, in which they were down 10 late in the game. I was watching this game, and Virginia Tech stormed back. Their quarterback, if you see injury. I can't call it injury, but he had a tear of skin from, like, his middle knuckle of his index finger on his throwing hand all the way to, his knuckle where his fist develops. It was ripped clearly to the white meat, and they covered that up as best as they could, and he went out there and still performed rushing and passing the ball as well. Virginia Tech came up with a huge win up against Notre Dame, winning that game 34-31. Tommy, your thoughts on the direction of both of these teams? Virginia Tech staying relevant in the ACC, and Notre Dame 4-7, 2-4 at home, and watching Virginia Tech basically just snatch this game away from them all into the fourth quarter.
How can I say this nicely without everybody getting pissed off? It's not a big deal. I'm sorry. I don't think either one of these teams any good, personally. Yeah, they might have beat Miami. That's when Miami, I have no clue what the hell I watched. Because obviously Miami fixed something on the offensive line. But, okay, move on. I really don't care about either one of these teams. They both are horrible in my book.
Okay, another matchup, college football, Stanford going into Cal, winning this with 45-31, in which McCaffrey almost had 300 yards rushing for over 284 yards he had. He nearly had 300-yard day. Him trying to wake up late into this season, I think it's too little too late, but your thoughts on Stanford getting back into the top 25 and going into Cal and trouncing them, putting up 45, damn near 50.
This was the perfect game for McCaffrey, because Cal, we all know, has no defense, the horrible defense. So this was the perfect game for them, the perfect game.
Okay, I do want to ask you a question before we go any further. With Louisville going down, how do you think this playoff scenario shakes up, you know, come around this next week? Well, this is the beginning of the week. So how do you feel like things will look as Monday, Tuesday approaches with the playoff scenario?
The top four teams will stay the same. They may shake them around, but I really look, the top four all stay the same. Because they're not moving Ohio State and Michigan. There ain't no way in hell if they're moving that. This week's going to get so sickening for ESPN because it's all you go hear, Ohio State, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan. Clemson will stay where they're at. Of course, Alabama will be where they are at. What I want to know is, I mean, Washington will probably go from, 6-5. And then everybody else will just keep moving up. What I want to see is how far Oklahoma moves up. Because I'm telling you, this Oklahoma team's not that bad now since they're healthy. Because when they lost to Ohio State, both running backs wasn't really healthy. D.D. Westbrook didn't really – he didn't even play that game, if I'm correct, because he wasn't healthy. You got to look at Oklahoma State. Without – I'm wondering if the committee is looking at that Central Michigan game that they lost, that they shouldn't have lost, because they screwed – the officiating screwed that whole thing up. So how far do they where do they move them at? Wisconsin. Where's Penn State go? They're 8. And it's going to be very – we'll get more into this Saturday. If Michigan beats Ohio State, Michigan's into – they move into the Big 12 – or the Big 10 championship. But if Ohio State wins and Penn State wins, Penn State goes into the Big Ten championship. So then what does that do with Ohio State in the Final Four, when the Final Four comes out, to who's actually in the playoffs? What do they do then? Are you putting two Big Ten champions in? What I really think is going to happen is the Big Ten's going to screw Penn State. That's all I'm saying. I'll save the rest for Saturday.
And it's interesting because all Penn State has to do is control their own destiny by winning this next game, which is feasible enough, but I don't want to count the chickens before they hatch. I don't want to jinx them by any means. I think everything weighs upon how this matchup goes down with Michigan and Ohio State. But clearly, I think this is going to be a problem for the committee, especially with a lot of these teams on the outside looking in. Like I said, even if these teams have one loss situation, I think they have to increase this to 8 teams. They have to, man. There's a lot of teams that are, you know, worthy of being able to play in a playoff, being one of the surprise teams that can knock off a top quality team that everybody's had their eyes open on, you know, so on and so forth. I.e., another situation that I'd like to discuss with you, the same situation that happened with Louisville. How far did Louisville drop after the loss that they've suffered this week as well?
That's a very – I'm very interested to see. See, they were 5th. I'll say 8, maybe 1st. They may drop them. They may drop them low. I don't know. Because with the way the committee's been going, it's like sometimes you're like, wait a minute, what? The head scratcher. I was shocked they played that bad. But then at the same time, I wasn't.
This is where I look at with Louisville, though. Louisville has 2 losses on the season. It's unfortunate that this one came at the latter portion of the season. But you got teams that have these 2 losses that are hovering around the top 5, you know, definitely within the top 10, i.e. a team like Wisconsin, who I feel like if Wisconsin and Louisville played each other, Louisville would be the successful team. But Wisconsin does, you know, put a hat on a hat. They block well. They have bigs up front on both the offensive and defensive line, but have 2 losses on the season and still get the credit because they're playing in an interesting Big Ten conference. So I wonder how far they fall. If they do fall out of the top 10, how far does the committee actually push a team like Louisville? Because there is a team that, you know, hovered around this situation that had the same scenario go on with them as well.
And did I not come on here, Ty, and say they were playing with fire? The last 2 games, Virginia and Wake Forest, I come on here and I said they got to stop starting slow stuff because they could come up against a good team and they're not going to be able to get caught up. And that's what happened with Houston. They were playing with fire. Then they got burned finally.
And this is a stunner because Houston actually turned it around on this game. I mean, they were playing questionable, getting those two losses on the season, and we didn't know what was happening, especially the game where we came in here and they were playing Navy. And I clearly was pulling for Houston to get it done, and Navy actually stunned them. So it was like, how is this season going to finish up for the Cougars? And well, Houston actually stunned America, or people that follow college football, taking care of business up against the Heisman hopeful Lamar Jackson and the Louisville Cardinals. But nevertheless, in college football, it's any given Saturday. Any given Saturday, I do want to give it that one. Any other college scenarios or teams that you'd like to discuss before we get moving?
I pretty much destroyed West Virginia, but the running back, Justin Crawford, I'm going to tell you, he put out some numbers. Rushed for over 300 yards and a loss. I got to give the dude credit. At least he came out and balled because nobody else did.
Right, and he finished with over 330, if I'm not mistaken. And their quarterback,
like 330.
Actually was, right, and their quarterback, Skyler, actually was the leading passer in the game, too, but wasn't enough for West Virginia to get it done. Just like I said, as of Westbrook, there's something about me in the state of Oklahoma and the last name Westbrook. He only had two catches, but he got to the house on one of them, 100-yard day. This guy is, if he's given the opportunity, he's so consistent. But they didn't need to force the issue because of what they took care of business with in front of West Virginia. West Virginia, I'm sorry that this has happened to you, but the committee wasn't giving you guys credit. You guys had to control your own destiny and went out. And unfortunately, at home, up against a top 10 team, you guys let them look like that top 10 team. They almost had a 60-point effort on you guys in Morgantown.
Yeah, but they were, I will give this, they did make it fourth quarter somewhat kind of interesting because they were down by, what was it, 40-something to 14? And they did cut it to 13 with like 10 minutes left. And I was sitting there thinking, wait a minute. If you take the two turnovers away down the red zone, the Crawford fumble and the Scout Howard fumble, they get points there. You take the two special teams blunders, the muff punt and the roughing the quarterback, or the punter, I mean, sorry, roughing the punter. That game, the Scarlett Howard interception in the, I think it was what, the start of the third quarter, and that they Oklahoma actually picked and scored on. There's 21 points right there on them stupid turnovers. Who knows? I mean, this game could have been a little different.
Okay. Like I said, West Virginia, I was pulling for you. Tommy made me take note, and then Tommy actually backed away from you guys. I guess because he knows a lot of you guys well personally.
Justin Mark. I know him personally because he's from here in Martinsburg. The one that Dede broke his tackle.
Monster. You're the monster. But nevertheless, Baker Mayfield, I don't know if you were listening to what we were going on in Sports City, but I was the one talking to Jeff earlier in the season. Now he showed up and has been balling out of control, and Oklahoma has not been taking any mercy on any team that they've been playing. So congratulations to Oklahoma actually going up against a quality top 15 team. Well, I call West Virginia quality and winning big, doubling their score. Okay. Tommy, the next topic I want to get to is something that you used to be real close to, but not any longer. Ronaldo McClain, former linebacker with your Baltimore Ravens, now down there in Dallas, had a 10-game suspension. The NFL has just levied another year-long suspension in front of him. Now, this is the guy that has had a troubled past previously, and I think he can't get out of his own way. So with this being in front of him, do you think he still has life in the NFL career?
I seen this morning. I feel bad because he is a former Raven. But then, in a way, I don't, because it's the same stupid mistake after the same stupid mistake after the same stupid mistake. Some of these guys just do not get it. I don't know if it's the camp, the crew that they've got around them, or they're just this stupid to keep making the same mistake over and over and over. I hate to see someone be out of a job, trust me. But he might be.
So you think that he won't play football again in the league?
Not unless he gets some people around him that really want to help him.
It'd be crazy, especially the way that Dallas is playing and he's actually falling short. At the wrong time. I mean, the Cowboys are threatening to be one of the Super Bowl contending teams, not only the best team in the NFL right now, but to try and challenge for the Vince Lombardi Trophy as well. And he can't be out there on the field, leaving Baltimore, a team where he learned a lot from, that chemistry that they had defensively, things of that nature. But right now, this is definitely unfortunate for his NFL career, and especially for him alone, the hit that a lot of people around the country are going to look at him is that he can't stay away from trouble, whether it's legally, whether it's, you know, a drug scenario, things of that nature. They have a close eye on him, and he has to know that. He has to know that. Another linebacker that I do want to mention, and this actually puzzled me at first, like my heart stopped. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a fan of this team personally by any means. But I've watched this kid ever since he came out of college, not when he came, when he was in college. I watched him closely because of the tenacity he played the game with, and I already knew that he was going to be a stud in the NFL, and Luke Kuechly. Now, watching the game, the Carolina Panthers were doing all that they could to keep the Saints, you know, under control, especially watching that high-powered offense that could snap at any given moment to put points up on the board. When you first see the scenario happen, it looked like Keekly's leg got folded underneath him. I thought it was a leg injury because of the way that he showed emotion. I'm up here thinking that he's telling them that, you know, his leg could have popped or something. Like, I'm concerned about him. And then they said it was a concussion. So it ended up being lesser of a scenario. But the emotion that he showed, it looked like it was severe. And now, you know, people out of the Carolina organization and Thomas Davis is also taking selfies with Luke and telling everybody that everything's okay. I'm not going to lie. I am a fan of Luke Kuechly. It actually let me breathe a little more to see that, hey, he might not play this upcoming Sunday, but at least he still has, you know, time within this season to help Carolina. I don't know if Carolina will be a playoff team. I think they have a lot of pushing and shoving to do to get back into this thing. I think Atlanta clearly wins the South. But, Tommy, your thoughts on Luke Kuechly and the injury that he suffered?
I hope he can return this year. It looks like you said, he can. He'll be out this week. But, I mean, I'm not a big fan of where he came from. But as a fan of football, a fan of more of a defensive-minded guy. Don't get me wrong, Sports City and Timeless, I like offense. But I grew up more of a defensive person. I like watching him and the way he plays defense. So I hope he's able to get back on the field this year. Because, God, Lord, we all know Carolina needs help on defense.
And they actually do well. They actually do well, like, inside the game. They get interceptions. They cause fumbles. They score. Their defense actually scores touchdowns. But Luke Kuechly is the engine. Like of course, they have people on that defense that are impact players. But especially with Josh Norman going to the Redskins, I think it's all on 59 shoulders. So hopefully Carolina can actually hang on until he gets back, and not to wish for things like this to happen, but if the Falcons start to fall off, they can pick up right there. But also another team that's in this scenario is Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is also they're a 4-5 team at this point in time, especially if they pull off an interesting win, can put themselves right back in position to be a playoff material type of team. But we'll get into this as we cover some of the NFL games that we are going to discuss. Any topic that you would like to discuss before we get into the games, though, Tommy?
Yeah. Let's just go ahead and start right into Sundays. It's got something to do with the NFL and a certain player that we talked about a lot. Tony Romo came out, had a press conference, saying that this is Prescott's team now. He's on me. Literally, when I watched this interview, I literally was waiting for him to say that he was retiring because that's the way it looked. It literally looked like he was retiring. It wasn't. He didn't do it. What I want to ask you, since this pretty much now is Prescott's team, does Romo get, I mean, there are reports Romo could be traded. And there are teams like Minnesota, Denver, Arizona. I've heard Chicago. Do you see him retiring at the end of this year, or do you see him back in Dallas, or do you see him somewhere else next season?
I think it'd be foolish for them to let him go on both sides, Tony Romo to go somewhere else, and for Dallas to let him go because, you know, God forbid, and I'm going to knock on wood because I don't want to wish any injury or anything, but picture something happened to Dak and you get rid of Tony Romo. It is not good in their backup quarterback situation. Who, Mark Sanchez? Like, Mark Sanchez will be the backup? Like, Tony Romo needs to retire a Cowboy. Everything that has happened to Tony Romo in his career, the good, the bad, the ugly, from the fumbles to the interceptions to the botch snap up there in Seattle, everything that has happened to Tony Romo, he deserves to retire the Cowboy. Hell, if you listen to Jerry Jones talk about it, Jerry Jones really acts like Tony Romo should still be the starter. He's frustrated that Dak is up until this point the guy, and Tony Romo, you know, kind of succeeded him. But you can't take away from what Dak has been able to do in his rookie campaign with the Cowboys. In his rookie campaign, I think Tony Romo didn't want to mess that up himself to have the public look at it. And I was just doing this, you know, personally, saying this personally, and forgive me for looking at it like this, Sports City, but I was like, you know what? Since Jerry Jones is so hung up on getting Tony Romo to start, I was like, I hope Tony comes back and he does well and, you know, gets them to a good playoff push, and then they fall short. And then everybody comes up and say, well, Tony was the quarterback. What if Dak was running the show? Because it's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. This is what you guys wanted. Well, not saying the fans or, you know, coaches. This is what Jerry Jones wanted. So now it's more or less if Dak falls short, it's a learning experience. He actually gets to, you know, put everything on the line because I'm looking at it like this. If Dak were to play this game up until this point, substituted by Tony Romo, they put Romo in, just like a lot of analysts around the league have been saying, you won't get the same effort from Dak because Dak knows that he has a short leash called number 9 that's behind them. So at least you get the full effort of what Dak is bringing to the table, especially with all of the playmakers from Witten to Beasley to, well, Dez doesn't really support Dak. It's funny. But Terrence Williams, all of them gawk at what this guy comes out there and does as a quarterback. He doesn't turn the ball over, and this is something that Romo struggled with, was turning the ball over, especially in critical times or in big games. They want to see how far they could go with Dak and also the rookie running back behind them and Ezekiel Elliott. This is a great start to both of their careers down in Dallas where they can make the difference.
I don't know what to think. I mean, I can see them keeping him. But Romo's not going to want – you can tell. That press conference killed him to know that he may not play the rest of this game this year. Depends on what happens. I mean, they would – if they would trade him away, they'd eat a lot of – they would open up a lot of money, though, on the books. So they could go out and get maybe a another wideout or somebody on defense. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what Jerry does.
Okay. Anything else that you'd like to get to that we're missing on? I know you probably did not watch the fight, and everybody that I thought that was going to come through is not here. I wanted to talk about that fight before we get into the game. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
Congratulations on Max Scherzer winning the Cy Young. The right guy won that, at least. I do disagree, and I know Todd's going to get into this. I do disagree with the NL MVP. Chris Bryant should not have done it. Don't get me wrong. He's one hell of a player. He had a good season. But look what he had around him, too. Rizzo and Zorbrick and everything. Daniel Murphy should have been the MVP. Yes, I know he's had Harper, Zimmerman, and certain pitching staff. Daniel Murphy carried the Nationals pretty much because Harper, for some reason, wasn't Harper. Harper started well and fell apart. Don't know why. I mean, I'm sorry. The MVP, the most valuable player. So you're telling me Chris Bryant, you take Chris Bryant off that Cubs team, they don't do what they do? Because I could really disagree with that. You take Daniel Murphy off the Nationals, I guarantee you that division is closer than what it was. I can guarantee it.
So for the biggest debate between me and this guy right here, and I want to, like, mention this without debating. I think both of them at the same capacity are the same situation. If you remove Murphy from the Nationals and you remove Bryant from the Cubs, I think both of those teams decline. Both of them. If you see the importance that Murphy had, especially the impact that he brought to the Nationals and helped them turn things around in the NL East, having them sit head and shoulders above a lot of the teams that they had in the NL East race, and then you look at the capacity of what Chris Bryant was able to do up until this point, he is the impact player of the team that won the World Series. Rizzo and them were struggling. Rizzo was struggling. Arrieta started losing his stuff, and you, out of all people, loved it. Loved how Jake started to fall apart late in the season. Loved it. The consistent cog was Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant was the guy that was consistent for them. It was, what series was it? I think it was the NLCS, where they needed him to hit a bomb. He needed to come up with a base hit or hit a home run to tie the score. I said right before he even got into the batter's box to start digging in, I said, Chris Bryant, if you hit a bomb, and I don't know if I was hoping for it. I'm not a Cubs fan. My former co-host, Die Hard, he's out here this week. Shout out the most. I said, Chris Bryant, if you hit a home run, you're legendary. I said it loud to my TV screen. He gets in there for the second pitch and took it out of the park. I was like, are you kidding me? Yeah, and it was against the Giants when he hit that home run. He hit the home run. I said, are you kidding me? And it was like I had to, like, look at myself to understand what I just said, and it happened right before the first pitch came and he hit that one out of the park. Chris Bryant has done a lot. He's young. I feel like he's going to be one of the next names like your Bryce Harper's, like your Barry Bonds, like your Ken Griffey's, like he's going to be that type of name. And not to say or take anything away from Daniel Murphy, this guy is an impact player. We are watching greatness play in the field and get up at the plate. And he's disciplined. That's the good part about him being a hacker. And not to even, you know, talk junk about your guy and Bryce Harper. Sometimes Bryce lacks his discipline up there at the plate. And they both, you know, came up together. Chris is more patient and hit for contact, not for hit swing for the fences. I'm not going to lie. I love when Bryce makes contact, but Chris Bryant will do it all. Chris Bryant is like the National League new age Derek Jeter. That's similar to what I could call it.
Bryce is patient. I mean, hell, he led the league in walks the last 2 years.
But that, yeah, because they don't want to pitch to him. They don't want to pitch to him. But I'm saying, how many times have you seen Bryce swing at a strikeout situation and he's clearly about to break his back and neck swinging for the ball and not keeping his eye on the ball?
But see, the voting's not supposed – the voting's, I believe – I know in the NBA it's like this, that the voting for the MVP is in before the playoffs. I believe MLB's the same way. The playoffs are not supposed to have anything to do with the season.
Right, right. And I respectfully look at it the same way. The Cubs were the best team in the league. Clearly, and proved it to follow throughout. Now, they're not even trying to weigh them winning the World Series to him getting the MVP, which they may say that they don't, but I feel like they do just to ice the cake, you know what I'm saying? But still yet, Chris Bryant was productive all season long. All season long.
So was Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy's right in the top three in almost every category. He won the batting champion.
Okay, like I said, I know this was set up for a very interesting debate, but we're going to have to agree to disagree because Chris Bryant, if they don't want you in Chicago, like I'm saying, you can bring your tail to Minnesota and play ball. And the crazy, this burns me to the core. This burns me to the core right now since we're talking baseball. They just put Trevor Plouffe on waivers, one of the better batters for Minnesota. They have him on waivers. And why somebody pick Plouffe up and we have a hole at the third base situation? So, Chris Bryant, hey, if you want to, you come to Minnesota. We don't have a third baseman. We don't have a third baseman now unless they turn around and pick him back up. I'm so mad. Trevor Plouffe is one of our better batters. He is, and they waived him. Unreal. Unreal. Okay, and shout out to Porcello, too, because Porcello, we did call that on air. We actually called both of them, Max Scherzer and Porcello, on air here in Sports City. So, Sports City, round of applause. You guys deserve it. We did call both of those pitchers. Even though Hendricks was doing his thing with the Cubs as well, we called both pitchers here on our select shows with the chefs. Okay, so I do want to get into the games that take place today. First matchup, Tommy's division rivals are going at it. The Pittsburgh Steelers carry their talents to Cleveland up against the Browns. Do the Browns get their first win of the season, or do the Steelers get to 500?
God, I want to take Cleveland. This game could be like that game up in New York with the Giants and Bears. This, you're not going to be able to throw the football because of this wind coming from Canada. Mm-hmm. So everything's going to be on the ground. With that said, give me Pittsburgh. Their run defense and with LaVia Bell running and everything, you're not going to see a whole lot of balls in the air, I don't think, if the weather's what they're saying could be in Cleveland. Give me Pittsburgh.
I agree with him. I'm going with Pittsburgh as well. So watch this game be a nail biter. Watch it be a nail biter, or this could potentially be the game that the Browns can win. I'm not going to pick the Browns, but I feel that this is going to be a nail biter, or the Browns could mess around and win this game. Sports City, I'm going to say it like this. I won't be surprised if the Browns win this game. I won't. I'm going to say it just like that. I'm going to go with the Steelers. I think they get back to 500. They need to turn this thing around and stay around the Baltimore Ravens, the game which I'm going to jump into next. But if the Steelers lose this one, there's going to be a lot of faith lost in Pittsburgh, and if they can turn this thing around to be a playoff team, if anything, they'd have to fight their way to stay relevant for a wild card if they lose this one. And I don't know if they hang on with at least six losses if they were to lose this game. Next matchup, like I stated, the Baltimore Ravens take their talent to the state of Texas up against the best team in the NFL right now, the Dallas Cowboys, sitting at 8-1. Their one loss came at home at the beginning of the season. Dak Prescott's first start up against the New York Giants. They have not lost since. Tommy, your thoughts on this matchup, black and purple or the star?
This is actually going to be Prescott's best defense team. This is the number one defense, number one defense in the NFL in Baltimore. Shocking. Just shocking. The number one rush defense. I mean, Jimmy Smith is out again. Everything I've seen, Bryant's playing. So, we all know how the old Cowboys Stadium shut down. Baltimore came in there and put a whooping on them. The Hurricane, McGahee came in there and ran run shot. But for picks on here, and I got to stay close to Ty, give me the Cowboys.
You went Dallas. Oh, my goodness. And I want to go Baltimore so badly. But I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go with Dallas as well. I think they keep this going. And the reason why I go with Dallas is because they've been hearing this for the past 2 or 3 weeks, especially with them going up against Pittsburgh last week. Oh, this is going to be the team to do it. This is going to be a team to knock off Dallas at this point in time, and they didn't. And this is one of the quality defenses, just like Tommy said, with them hovering around 500, sitting at 5-4. And just like Tommy also said, that their rush defense is the one thing that they're looking at to slow down Ezekiel Elliott. If Zeke sees daylight, I feel sorry for that back end for the secondary for the Baltimore Ravens, because I don't know if they'll be able to catch him. I think that'll be a tough scenario to try to catch him. So we'll see how this does pan out. But I don't think they're in a fortunate scenario. So I'm going to go with Dallas also. But if Baltimore pulls this off, this is a stunner. This is a stunner. I will say that. I have to see what Flacco has up his sleeve. Hopefully Mike Wallace and Steve Smith can get this together to attack that secondary. I think those are some key cards to try and knock off the Cowboys team. The Ravens have to give him time to win this game.
I do think this is a close ball game like last week, like Dallas-Pittsburgh was. I really do.
Okay, see, the next matchup I have is a division battle. The Tennessee Titans, 5-5 on the season, up against the Indianapolis Colts, 4-5, in Lucas Oil Stadium, in which the Colts are favored in this matchup and have not been playing great football up until this point. Tommy, who do you like in this matchup and why? Tennessee or Indy?
Let me flip a coin, heads and tails, because I don't know. Give me Tennessee, that running game. And you've been on that Indy's defense or offensive line. They can't block. They've got Tennessee's got a subpar good rush defense or deep pass rush. So yeah, give me Tennessee.
This game is so tough. And he said flip a coin. I feel the same way. And which they're having questions about DeMarco Murray. He's nursing an injury. They're saying that he may be able to give it a go. We'll see how that does pan out. I really want to challenge and go with Tennessee up against Indy being at home, too. You know what? I think this is where we'll separate right now. I'm going to go with the Colts. I'm going to go against Tommy right now. I feel Luck has something up his sleeve to make these guys be 500. They're 4-5 right now. If he continues to fall, there's questions for me in front of Andrew Luck. I'm tired of seeing it. I'm just tired of it. He just got this doggone extension between him and Philip Rivers, both of which have got these doggone contract extensions that look questionable, I have questions. Like I have my own questions. Okay, next matchup we have is a very interesting one. Both of these teams sit below 500, but they have capability to have big play type of games. The Buffalo Bills go to Ohio to take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Tommy, who do you like in this matchup and why?
I'm going with my former favorite team. Give me Buffalo.
This is a tough one for me. Cincinnati at home or Buffalo? And the way that they've been playing, this is crazy. I am going to go with Cincinnati just to keep everything, you know, in suspense in the AFC North. I think, especially with them with the tie on their season, they're 3-5-1. I think that tie will either come back to bite and burn them or be helpful at the end of the day. So I'm going to go with Cincinnati to stay afloat in the AFC North. As much as I want to see the Bills come up with a big win and Shady McCoy, everybody knows that's my running back fantasy, I think it might be a tough day for him to get loose. So I hope he does.
I disagree. I think Shady goes off. I think he gives you – I'm not sure how the point stuff works. I say he rushes for at least a 120 and 2 touchdowns.
Wow. But, hey,
I'll tell you. Is Percy Harvin playing?
Yes, Percy is playing.
Yeah. Give me Buffalo all day, every day.
Okay, one of Tommy's favorite teams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, take their talents to Arrowhead up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Who do you like in this matchup and why?
Kansas City. It's in Arrowhead, and we know who that quarterback on the other side is.
I agree with them with Kansas City, but I feel like this is going to be an interesting game. I don't think that the spread is 7, so they think that the Chiefs will win this by more than 7. This is going to be an interesting one. I think this is going to be close. That's the way that the Buccaneers have been playing as of late. I'm going to go with Kansas City, but I think this could be a 4-3-point game. I think this is going to be a closer game than people expect.
And Houston is back for Kansas City. That pass rush got even better than what it already is.
And they're already talked about Kansas City being one of the best teams in the AFC too, especially the way they've been playing ball and the streak of wins that they've been able to put together. Andy Reid always has this magic. Somehow, some way, he does this. He gets this stuff done. He does. Great coach.
Right now, Kansas City's the number 2 seed if the playoffs would start. Oakland would get the 5 seed in the wild card.
Right, because they beat Oakland in their matchup this season so far. So.
Right.
Next matchup, I don't even know. I'm going to let you do what you want to do. The Chicago Bears in New Jersey, that's why Moses out here up against the New York Giants. Can Cutler get it done in front of this New York Giants team, who's hot now, and they're 6-3 on the season?
I mean, if the winds are gusting like they say they are up there in New York, they're not throwing the football. So this could come down to running game. I have no clue who I'm taking, because Giants can't really run the football. They're more of a let's line 4 off and chuck it. So, I mean, and Chicago is the same way with Cutler. They don't have a running game really now. It's whose defense do I trust more? And you've got Chicago running their mouth how they're going to do this and do that to the Giants. So for that point, give me the Giants.
We agree again. I'm one with the Giants as well. Even if they say that the passes won't be thrown, I still think that Eli will make some of these passes. I think the Bears have a tough time trying to deal with Odell Beckham. And the Giants' pass rush has been getting there. So if they can actually close the window and shut this pocket down, I want to see if Cutler can come up with a big win. if Cutler can make this happen. The Bears are 0-5 on the road. They won their two games on the season in Soldier Field. They have not been successful outside of the state of Illinois. So I'm going to go with the Giants. Repeat that again.
I said Jeffrey's out, right? Didn't he get hurt or something?
And he's out also. No, he's not. He's not hurt. He's serving a substance abuse suspension.
That's right. That's right. That's what it is. Okay, my bad. I knew it was something.
He's out for 4 weeks. Another NFC North matchup. The Jacksonville Jaguars go into Ford Field up against the Detroit Lions. The battle of the cats. Who do you like in this matchup and why?
I hate picking this game. I was hoping maybe you overlook it or something. Give me the Lions.
Why do you hate picking this game for?
Because no matter what, if I pick the Lions, they'll goof up and lose it. If I pick Jacksonville, they'll goof up and they'll lose it. It's just how it goes with these teams.
Okay, fair enough. Moving right along.
I take it you're going with Detroit, right?
I mean, do I have to answer that? Okay, yeah.
Or you going with the Hurricane? You going with the Hurricane in Jacksonville? I mean, that's what you probably do because you love your Hurricane, supposedly.
I do, and that's why I didn't really want to say nothing because I'm Detroit. I really felt like Detroit should have picked up Allen Hurns while nobody was looking at him in that draft. Nobody picked him up. I was like, he would have been a good piece outside of Calvin at that point in time. Next thing you know, this guy's a star down there in Jacksonville. So I feel like he could end up hurting us today because of our back end and our secondary. And this
Bortles is turning around because Bortles is playing horrible this year.
Yeah, but I don't want to see him turn it around today. Not today.
Well, either do I or not. Not today. No, they got your jokey Lions.
Hey! Like I said, this game scares me. I'm not gonna lie, because this is a game that they should win. I feel like this is a game that is gonna come down to the wire again. I am so tired of sweating out. Every game that the Lions have played has come down to the fourth quarter. Even in the game where we watched the Packers put up 31 points in the first half, the Lions had to go into the last quarter with the last possession and still lost. Or the game they lost up against Tennessee. It still lost, and it went into the fourth quarter with Stafford throwing a critical pick at the end of the game. I'm tired of sweating games out. Can they get it, a handle on this game by the third quarter going into the fourth and make it look convincing? That is the question that I have. But I feel like this is going to be that type of game. I might as well start calling them the Cardiac Cats. I got to. Last 1 o'clock game that we have is the Arizona Cardinals up against the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. This game is a nail biter, 1.5 point difference between the two. Who do you like in this matchup and why? 4-4 with one tie Cardinal team or 5-4 Vikings team that has 4 straight losses?
I have no clue because Arizona hasn't seemed to prove they can play on the road. But I have no clue what in the world is going on in Minnesota. No clue at all. North Turner leaves. The offensive line seems they forgot how to block. The defense forgets how to tackle, they'll dive 2 feet ahead of the wide receiver. I'm going to do it. I don't know why, but give me Minnesota.
I actually agree. I'm going with the Vikings, and here's why. And not to just do this because I see it like this, but I have to. They started the season out 5-0, and they lost 4 straight. This would be absolutely epic if they mess around and lost 5 straight after they won 5 straight. Like, I don't know what type of collapse that would be, but it'd be historic. And it'll be one of those conversations that people will hold around the league, especially while they were winning without Adrian Peterson. They cannot put this on the shoulders of Adrian Peterson. They can't. I mean, it'd be helpful if he was there. Of course he's a monster. Of course they have that pass game. Bradford came here and looked like a stud. Everybody was like, oh, Bradford's on top of the league. Now Bradford fell back into that conversation on questionable, turnover prone, can't win big games. I think they get it done up against the Cardinals. But here's the interesting point. What do the Vikings do to slow down David Johnson? That boy is a well, that grown man. Let me not call him a boy. That grown man is doing work. But I want to see what Minnesota does to corral him. I'm going with the Vikings also.
I'll tell you this much. Stephon Diggs from Minnesota has really turned it around.
Well, he was already a player that a lot of people were talking about at the beginning of the season also.
Stephon Diggs is a beast. And he's from the DMV area, just to mention.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay, the first 4 o'clock matchup I have is the Miami Dolphins on the road up against the Los Angeles Rams. I was going to say St. Louis. I got it right this time. The Los Angeles Rams are starting Jared Goff for the first time this season up against the Dolphins in their front and, of course, in front of Ndamukong Suh. Very puzzling situation where why Jeff Fisher has to go this way, but Case Keenum has not shown promise moving forward. They have to go in another direction. Tommy, who do you like in this matchup and why? Dolphins or Rams?
I mean, it's Fisher or someone in that organization is listening to us. Because did I not mention this? And then it was, what, 2 days later or a day later? Why is he not? You move up in the draft, and now all of a sudden he's starting. Kylie, listen to us.
I know this. I know that. We've called a lot of things here, and then a week later that stuff happened. I'm completely sold. I'm with you 100%.
With that said, I'm going with Miami.
I agree with him. I'm going with the Dolphins as well. Goff gets his first taste of NFL, you know, startingness, if you will. They have the pieces on the outside, but I think the way that Jay Ajayi has been playing, he's been opening his game up for Tannehill. I feel bad to even say Tannehill and opening the game up, but Tannehill has actually found confidence throwing the ball. This actually makes the Dolphins look scary. It makes them look scary that they have a balanced attack now. I agree with Tommy. I'm going with Miami. Yes or no? I'll let you answer this yes or no question. Do the Niners win today?
No.
Okay. I agree with him. I'm going I'm going N-E also. Okay. Last of the 4 o'clock, a very interesting matchup, the Battle of the Birds, the Philadelphia Eagles up against the Seattle Seahawks, State of Washington. Who do you like in this matchup and why? Do the Eagles push this to 6-4, or do the Seahawks continue to fly 7-2-1 if they can push it to that? They're 6-2-1 at this point.
7-2-1.
I agree. I am also going with Seattle as well. Here's the reason why. This will be a true test for Carson Wentz, not only for him to be the stud rookie quarterback, you know, coming fresh out of college and doing his thing, but to go up against the Legion of Boom in Seattle, up against the 12th man, and let me ice the cake. It's raining, it's pouring, the old man is snoring. So the Eagles have to watch their quarterback try to get it done in the rain also. So this is going to be tough for him to get it done up against the Legion of Boom. I'm going with Seattle. If Wentz gets it done, I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked. The night capper for the evening, the Green Bay Packers in the DMV, right around the corner from where Tommy is right now, up against the Washington Redskins, the Redskins in which are 5-3-1, people. They have a tie on the season. Also, the Packers are 4-5. I know Aaron Rodgers has not been addressed. I know he would probably stress the fact of relax to everybody, but everybody's been talking about how the Packers have been playing questionable up until this point, in which, myself included, that last game that they played up against Tennessee where they gave up damn near 50, the Packers have something to say. They better come out and say something, or these questions will continue to loom, and it will only get worse for the Green Bay Packers. I've tried to contact the Green Bay Packer fan that used to be here at Sports City. I'm not getting any response. I tried, but I want to, man. But who wins this game and why, Tommy? Who do you like, Aaron Rodgers? Or you like that, don't you? You like that.
I hate both these teams. Just let it know. Before I pick, Todd, do you know why we have not seen Herb Waters on offense? I did not know this until I talked to somebody close to him.
What happened to him?
Nothing happened to him. They're turning him into a corner because they need help at DB. So Herb Waters is actually a corner now.
Wow.
With that said, I don't know who to – the reasonable pick would be the Redskins. They're at home. The Packers look horrible defensively. Jackson supposedly coming back with the lethals that they've got, Vernon Davis, Reed. But then in a way, I can actually really see Green Bay going in here and winning. It's just the way the NFL works. I hate to say it. I really do. But give me the Redskins. Rest in peace, Mr. Powell.
Wow. I'm going to fall away from Tommy on that one. As much as I don't want to do it, and knowing that they're a division rival of mine, I think since Aaron Rodgers watched a Tennessee Titan team put up 47, all hell is to be paid. I feel so sorry for the Washington Redskins. And by the way, I need Randall Cobb to do something. I am tired of going into these games for myself and my fantasy team, and he's only able to get one score, and the guy that's defending him is clearly beaten by like three steps. Rodgers won't even attempt to get the guy the ball. He won't even get Randall Cobb the ball. Mind you, Randall Cobb has been playing every week injured. Every week he's been injured, and he's still out there playing and scoring, but he doesn't get the grabs. They won't throw him the ball. So I'm going to go with Green Bay. Like I said, I feel like this could be a tough scenario with them coming off of a loss and everybody talking junk about what the Packers are able to do up until this point.
We don't have any more games, right? The pick?
We're done with week 11. Or is it week? Yeah, week 11, yep.
Romo is active. Romo's active in his sweat as the backup quarterback. How much you want to bet Prescott struggles, they pull him, and they put Romo in, and he throws a game-winning touchdown? Watch. This is the way the story's written.
I don't know. I don't want to see it like that. I want to see Dak get through this. And I don't even feel like it'll be right if that were to sit up there and happen. As soon as Dak gets into a game and he struggles, that they pull him and put Romo in, and Romo wins the game. Like, they got to let Dak go through the good and the bad. I mean, he lost his first game and won 8 straight, and then you yank him. Like, I don't think that'd be good or smart. However they put the scenario together, if that were to potentially happen, Jerry Jones has more power than he needs to with that team, and Jason Garrett, and as we all know, is the puppet that he is. He really is. Unless Dak mess around and get hurt, and I'm going to knock on wood because I don't wish injury on no man, I'm hoping that that does not happen. I'm hoping that doesn't happen.
I'm just saying something is awful fishy. He comes out, what was it, Tuesday? It makes this, suppose, I'm telling you, something's up. He has not came out all the whole time. Now he comes out Tuesday and says all this, that supposedly Jerry Jones had no clue that was being done. Bullshit. If one owner knows what's, if any owner in the NFL knows what's going on with every player, because he's got to have their noses so far off their behinds, it's not funny. It's him. He knows what's going on. I'm telling you, something fishy's going on.
We'll see. I really hope that that does not pan out, but it could potentially happen, especially with everybody. Well, I want to say the front office pulling for Tony Romo, because the fans that I know, especially around this area, that are diehard Cowboy fans, they probably will call me after the show because of me talking about the Cowboys. They do not want to see Romo. You got to hear how they are acting when I say that. I'm like, Tony Romo's coming back. Tony Romo's coming back. All of the fans that I know around here, they're like, I will fly to Dallas and go after Jerry Jones myself. So I know a lot of people will be kind of pissed off if they were to turn this team back over to Tony Romo, especially with the success that Dak has had in his first season, and no quarterback has had an 8-game stretch of wins in Cowboys history. In Cowboy history. I don't know. We'll see. Any other topic that you'd like to address, Tommy?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, we are at the tail end of the show.
I got one.
I got to do it. How in the hell does your Hoyas lose the 2 games they lost? How do you lose to Maryland like that at the end? How? You had a 10-point lead. There was, what, a 10-point lead with, like, 2-something left, what I saw.
The game against Maryland, I clearly don't know what to say or do about that situation. All I can really say is I don't like to wish, you know, death or things of that nature on anybody. They need to get rid of John Thompson III now, right now. He had no control over that team. There's no discipline for them to have that lead with seconds on the clock. LJ Peak fouling out late in that game and didn't even know the importance of him being out there on the floor. He fouls out and leaves this team to a transfer and Pryor is I question his basketball IQ. A lot of crazy things are happening. Tomorrow, Georgetown plays Oregon, the number 4-ranked team in the nation at that. I don't even feel like Georgetown would be successful.
When the polls come out, because they lost, they got pretty much manhandled against Baylor last week.
And
I believe it was.
So
they'll be down. They're still a good ball club, but they won't be 4 when the polls come out.
Right, even in still, you got to respect what Oregon brings to the table. I feel like Georgetown is going to end up being on a 3-game losing streak. Their one game that they won was up against upstate South Carolina or something like that, or upstate Georgia. I've never even heard of this school. They go out there and put up 100 points, have a clear lead up against Maryland, lose the game, and then they lose to Arkansas State, another nameless university that is a Division I competitor. And Georgetown loses that game at home. John Thompson III, just because your name is John Thompson, doesn't mean you should hold on to the job any longer. There are coaches that can succeed you. I think that they're hanging on to him running that Princeton offense, which they don't run anymore. They don't even run that Princeton offense anymore. It looks more or less like street ball when Georgetown is playing. Enough is enough. They need to close the door on that Thompson regime. He is nowhere near the coach of his father. Oh, yes, he made the Final Four in 2007 with Roy Hibbert and Jeff Green and Wallace, all of the guys that we had. He hasn't been there since. He's had 2 first-round exits. I mean, I could go on and on about his doggone resume. It's not impressive. What's holding him there is his first and last name, Jonathan Thompson, but he's the third. He's not junior to go. Okay, We are at the tail end of the show. Great work. I need a plug, closeout, shout-out before we shut it down. Tommy, give me your closeout.
Good show. Glad to be back. Sorry about last week being out with me. Basketball schedules, it's hectic. We should be back all next this coming week. Practices start right after school. We should be out by 2:30 because the girls have to take over. I know it's going to be hectic because I'm not sure what Ty's doing with this week being Thanksgiving week. Just pay attention and watch. Hopefully we can get in.
So I saved this point in time right now because we have a little bit of time left in the show, so I'm going to do it right now. Sports City, I'm not going to lie. I am an avid. I feel like I'm underselling the scenario that I'm about to dish out right now. But I'm a big-time sport junkie. I love everything about sports. You hear me, especially on my birthday, which is coming up in 3 weeks. I go out to Vegas all the time and you know, just sit around and watch everybody that loves sports. That's the real reason why I go to Vegas, because it's room after room after room of people that love sports just as much as me, and I feel like I'm home being around it. But being that I say Las Vegas, being that I mentioned sports with that situation, Sports City, I seen something last night that I felt I was cheering for the wrong side. Last night there was a boxing match between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev, in which I was saying my heart is with Andre Ward, so I'm cheering for Ward, but if I was in Las Vegas, I would bet Sergey Kovalev would win the fight. Sergey Kovalev dominated this fight up until, I want to say, the seventh or eighth round before he started to look like he started to tire, and Andre Ward started to get his legs underneath him and started to make a change in the fight, in which Letterman, one of the judges, well, one of the hosts or analysts that was, you know, judging the fight, had Kovalev up by five rounds, including the second round, which Kovalev dropped Ward. Ward fell. Andre Ward won the fight by 1 point. I don't like to do this, especially taking this time out to cut this out into the show and say this. Boxing is dirty. Something is clearly wrong with the sport of boxing. Kovalev won that fight. And I'm an Andre Ward fan. I've been following Ward since he started getting big and hanging on to that zero of him being undefeated. Kovalev was undefeated, too. Now he's defeated in a fight where he looked clean. His face had no scars, no bruises, no nothing. If you look at Andre Ward's face, I was staring at Andre Ward. Andre Ward looked harmed, like he got jumped. And that was Kovalev that did the damage to him. Hell, Kovalev dropped him. He dropped him on a clear punch, straight in his eye. He punched him in his eye and dropped him. Not one of those hit him on the chin and his legs ain't there. No, no. He caught him dead on the eye because his legs weren't there, clearly off balance, wasn't ready for the power that Kovalev produces. Kovalev, I feel terribly sorry for you. Terribly sorry for you. And clearly, I hope that the boxing world gets you the rematch that you deserve. You deserve it. You deserve to hang on to your belts. But right now, Andre Ward has those belts. And I know the boxing world needs to see this rematch. Hell, the way their boxing is struggling to hang on to get people to watch, especially the pay-per-view, what y'all just did, that might help for the rematch. That might help you guys. But if you guys continue to have fishy judges, things of that nature, boxing will struggle. And UFC will continue to be king over you guys, and I don't even think UFC is bigger than boxing. I don't, but they are at this point in time. SportsCityChefs.com, check out the website, the interviews, the blog. The chefs will be back here tomorrow with the Monday night sports wrap-up, talking about the games that went down today, as well as the Monday night matchup, who we like to see win the game and why Monday night it should be a good one. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that this is Chefs again, and if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
Kick back, relax, enjoy this, everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark Mimosas and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, and 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.